Become an elder scam hero. You may be the only person standing between an older customer and the next transaction. A frontline field guide for reaching an older customer who may have already been coached to lie to you and distrust you. A note before we begin, I am not a lifelong fraud investigator. I didn't spend my career studying scams. I'm a daughter. My elderly parents were pulled into a sophisticated government impersonation scheme that lasted approximately 5 months. During that time, there were warning signs, there were concerned family members, there were financial professionals who noticed something wasn't right. Transactions were stopped, accounts were closed, questions were asked, Adult Protective Services even came to their home, and still the money kept moving. My family eventually learned something that completely changed the way I think about these crimes. My parents weren't simply ignoring the warnings. They had been prepared for them. The people directing my parents had told them that their banks might question them. They had given them explanations for why they needed their money. They demanded secrecy, and they had created a story in which the very people trying to protect my parents could appear to be part of the threat. Once we understood that, a question started bothering me. What could someone on the front lines have done differently? That's what this book is about. It isn't a promise that you can stop every crime. It isn't legal or compliance guidance, and nothing here replaces your organization's policies, escalation procedures, or applicable law. It's one family story and a different way of thinking about the few minutes you may have with an older customer when something just doesn't feel right, because you may be the only person standing between that customer and the next transaction. Part 1. The Elder Scam Hero System from 10,000 Feet. My parents didn't wake up one morning and decide to hand their money to strangers. It happened gradually. The scheme began with what appeared to be a technology problem. That led to a supposed help desk. The help desk led to someone supposedly connected to their bank. Eventually, they were communicating with someone they believed was a federal representative. The story became frightening. Their money was supposedly in danger. They were supposedly cooperating with an investigation, and they were told that moving their money was how they could protect it. The people directing them maintained near daily contact, and there was one incredibly important rule: don't tell anyone. Not their children, not other family members, not the people who might interfere. The secrecy wasn't presented as something suspicious. It was presented as a requirement of a confidential investigation. That distinction matters. My parents thought they were being responsible. After everything came into the open, we found handwritten records, dates, amounts, notes about gold. They kept track of what they were doing. When strangers came to collect packages, there was even a procedure for verifying the correct person using the serial number on a dollar bill. This wasn't what I had imagined someone being scammed would look like. My parents weren't casually throwing money at strangers. They thought they were following a process. And when you're frightened and believe you're dealing with authorities, following the process feels like the responsible thing to do. The money didn't leave one way. As one method became difficult, another appeared. There were wires, there were checks, there was cash, there were shipments, there were gold bars, there were people who came to collect packages. My mom was sent around town carrying out instructions. At different points, different institutions saw different pieces of what was happening, but nobody had the entire picture. That's important. The person standing in front of you may represent one transaction. To the customer, however, that transaction may be one tiny step inside a story they've been living in for weeks or months. People did notice. This is the part that stayed with me. People noticed. A bank denied a large wire. Another bank's fraud department eventually closed accounts. Another wire was rejected. A stop payment was attempted on a cashier's check. Financial advisors reportedly raised concerns. Adult Protective Services came to the house. My dad himself was becoming concerned. He told my mom, "This just doesn't sound right. We may never see this money again." Esterzel. My sister and I knew something was wrong too. We pushed, but my parents wouldn't tell us what was happening. They kept telling us some version of, we'll tell you when it's over, just not now. We didn't know they were caught inside a scam. We wondered whether they were in legal trouble. We wondered whether they were paying someone off. If we knew something was terribly wrong, we didn't know the story they were living inside. And without knowing that story, none of our objections could directly challenge it. Then someone didn't let the moment pass. Eventually, a professional became concerned enough not to simply accept what was happening and move on. An office manager had a sister working in fraud in the same building. Concern became conversation. Conversation became another set of eyes, and eventually the children were contacted when there was room to do so as the elder scam investigation opened. That connection mattered. The hero in our story wasn't someone who single-handedly solved an international criminal operation. She didn't recover everything. She didn't arrest anyone. She did something much more ordinary. She didn't let the moment pass. That's what I mean by an elder scam hero. You don't have to solve the crime. You may simply be the person who notices that something doesn't make sense and decides that. I asked and they said everything was fine isn't enough for me yet. Part 2. Why every elder scam intervention failed my parents. And here's the question I couldn't stop thinking about afterward. How could so many warnings fail? At first, that seems impossible. Surely after a bank refuses a transaction, someone wakes up. Surely after another institution raises concerns, they reconsider. Surely when their own children say something doesn't make sense, that breaks through. Surely when someone from Adult Protective Services comes to the house, that's enough. Except it wasn't. To understand why, you have to understand something the people directing my parents did very effectively. They predicted the warnings. Before some of those warnings ever arrived, my parents had already been given a way to interpret them. Imagine someone you believe is a federal official tells you your money isn't safe. Then, this investigation is confidential. Then, someone at the bank may be involved. Then, the bank may try to stop you from protecting your money. Now imagine walking into your bank. The banker becomes concerned. They start asking questions as they try to stop the transaction. What does that prove? To you and me, it may look like the bank just saved the customer. But inside the story the customer has been given, something completely different can happen. The warning becomes evidence that the warning they received earlier was correct. The criminal predicted the bank would interfere. Now the bank is interfering. Prediction confirmed. The customer may have been prepared for your question. Suppose an older customer requests a large withdrawal. You ask, what's the money for? They say, home renovations. Sounds reasonable. Maybe you ask another question. They have another reasonable answer. Here's the problem. Those answers may not have originated with the customer. My parents were given explanations for moving money, home renovations, real estate, vacation-related expenses, wanting access to their own cash. By the time someone asked a perfectly reasonable question, there could already be a perfectly reasonable answer waiting. That's why this isn't simply a knowledge problem. You can teach employees every scam currently circulating. Tomorrow, there will be another variation. The more useful question may be, has someone prepared this person for me? Are you being scammed? Think about what answering yes would have required from my parents. Yes wouldn't simply mean I misunderstood this transaction. It could mean the person I believe is a federal official isn't a federal official. The investigation isn't real. My money wasn't being protected. The people I distrusted may have been trying to protect me. The secrecy I've maintained was part of the manipulation. The explanations I've given people weren't protecting an investigation. And the money I've already moved may be gone. That's not a simple yes or no question anymore. That's asking someone to dismantle the reality they've been living inside. So they say, no, and they may genuinely believe it. That is why I don't think the central frontline problem is how do we ask, are you being scammed, more convincingly? The better question is, how do we help someone recognize what's happening without requiring them to admit it first? That leads us to something very different. Part 3. Why a story can work when questions don't. Questions require answers, and answers create pressure. If someone has already been told not to disclose what's happening, every question can feel like another test they have to pass. So what happens if we temporarily stop asking? Tell them a story. Not a lecture, not a list of scam types, not a piece of paper covered in warnings. A human story. The customer doesn't have to defend themselves against somebody else's story. They don't have to admit anything. They can simply listen. And while they're listening, something important can happen. They can recognize themselves. Tell my parents' story. You don't need to memorize a speech. You can say something as simple as, "Before you move any money, let me tell you what happened to an elderly couple. They believed they were protecting their money. They were told what they were doing had to remain confidential. They were warned that their banks would question them and might try to stop them. They were given explanations for what to say when people asked why they needed the money. Eventually, the wife was being sent around town moving money, buying gold, and handing packages to people she didn't know. Their own children knew something wasn't right, but the couple wouldn't tell them what was happening. They kept saying they could explain everything when it was over. By the time the family understood what was happening, an enormous amount of money had already moved. Does any part of that story sound familiar? Then stop. You don't need to immediately follow it with, "See, you're being scammed." That destroys the point. Give them the space to make the connection. Don't tell them what's happening to them. This became one of the central ideas behind this entire project. Don't tell them what's happening to them. Tell them what happened to someone else. Let them recognize themselves. That's the difference. You're not trying to win an argument. You're creating a contradiction. If the customer has been told, "The bank will ask why you need the money," and then you tell them, "My parents were told the bank would ask why they needed the money," something has changed. How did you know? If they were told, "Don't tell your children until the investigation is finished," and then your story says, "My parents kept telling us they'd explain everything when it was over." Again, how did you know? The story can introduce information that is difficult to explain inside the private reality they've been given. Maybe nothing happens. Maybe they proceed. But perhaps for the first time, there's a crack, and all we're looking for right now is the crack. Part 4. What to say when they suddenly realize something is wrong? This is the part I don't want us to overlook. Suppose it works. The customer's expression changes. They go quiet, they ask you to repeat something, or they say, "That's exactly what they told me." What happens next? It would be easy to feel victorious. We got through. But think about what may be happening inside that person. They could suddenly be wondering how much they've lost. They may realize they've lied to their bank. They may have kept secrets from their spouse or children. They may have distrusted people who were actually trying to protect them. They may have been communicating with the person directing them every day. Shame can arrive very quickly. Fear can too. This is not the moment to make them defend themselves. Give them an exit. When everything finally came out in our family, my mom was devastated. She was sobbing as the gravity of what had happened began to settle in. Our response wasn't, "How could you possibly do this?" We told my parents, "We stick together as a family. These people are good at what they do. They had you prepared before they ever spoke to you. What's done is done. Now that it's out in the open, we can deal with what comes next together." And eventually we realized something incredibly simple. My parents didn't have to solve the crime. They didn't need to determine the real identity of the people calling. They didn't need to confront them. They didn't need to win an argument. They didn't need to understand every lie. They just had to stop talking to them. Eventually, their phone numbers were changed because the calls continued, but my parents didn't have to answer. The control depended on communication. Once that communication stopped, something changed. The "you don't have to say anything" script. If someone seems to recognize themselves in the story, don't demand a confession. Try something like, "you don't have to tell me anything right now." "You don't have to decide who's telling you the truth right now." "You don't have to call anyone or confront anyone." "You can simply stop today." "Don't move the money right now." "Don't contact the person directing you." "Give yourself some time and talk with someone you trust." Then follow your organization's approved procedures for what happens next. The exact words matter less than the permission you're giving them. You don't have to admit you were wrong in order to stop. That may be the emotional bridge we're missing when we expect someone to suddenly announce, "I've been scammed." They don't need that word yet. They need an exit. Part 5, how one person becomes an elder scam hero. There is something uncomfortable about my parents' story. There were many opportunities. Different institutions saw different transactions. Different people became concerned. Different safeguards fired. And yet no single person could see everything. That's one reason these crimes are so difficult. One institution may see a wire. Another sees an account opening. Someone else sees a withdrawal. A dealer sees a gold purchase. Family sees unusual behavior. Everyone has a piece. The criminal has the whole picture. And the victim has been instructed not to connect everyone else. That makes the person willing to take one more step incredibly important. You don't have to be the investigator. The office manager who mattered in our story didn't need to identify every transaction my parents had made. She didn't need to know the entire scheme. She needed to recognize something isn't right. Then she needed to do something with that concern. She had access to someone with fraud experience. She involved another person. Things slowed down. Eventually, there was an opportunity for the children to be contacted. Once the family finally understood what was happening, the secrecy that had protected the operation began collapsing. That is why I use the word hero. Not because I expect frontline employees to become vigilantes, not because you should ignore your organization's rules, and not because one person can guarantee an outcome. It's because sometimes the difference is an ordinary person deciding, "I'm not comfortable letting this moment pass." You may be the only one. If you work with older customers, someday someone may sit across from you with a perfectly reasonable explanation. They may be calm, they may seem certain, they may tell you they're fine, they may even become irritated that you're asking, and maybe everything really is fine. Most transactions are legitimate. Older adults have every right to control their own money. But occasionally, the person sitting across from you may have been talking every day to someone you can't see. That person may have told them what you're going to ask. They may have supplied the answer. They may have told the customer you're wrong. They may have told them their children can't know. And they may already be waiting for your customer to leave your office and call them. That's the moment I want you to remember my parents. You don't have to solve everything. You don't have to accuse anyone. You don't even have to use the word scam. Tell the story. Give them a moment to recognize themselves. Give them permission to stop. And if your concern remains, follow the procedures available to you and find the next appropriate person who can help. Because sometimes being an elder scam hero is simply refusing to let, "they said everything was fine," be the end of the story. Final thought, before they move any more money. I can't change what happened to my parents. There are transactions I wish someone had stopped. There are conversations I wish we'd known how to have. There are things that seem painfully obvious now that none of us could see while they were happening. But we can do something with what we learned. That's why I'm sharing their story. Not to make older people afraid, not to take away their independence, and certainly not to suggest that every unusual financial decision is evidence of a crime. I'm sharing it because somewhere another parent may be standing at a counter right now. They may have been told exactly what to say. They may have been warned not to trust the person standing across from them. And someone may be waiting on the other end of the phone for the money to move. If you're the person standing across from them, don't just ask the question they've already been taught to answer. Try something different. Tell them a story, give them permission to stop, and don't let the moment pass. Become an elder scam hero. Important note. This book and its accompanying materials are educational resources based in part on one family's experience. They are not legal, compliance, financial, law enforcement, or clinical guidance, and do not guarantee that financial exploitation will be identified or prevented. Financial professionals should use these ideas only in ways consistent with their organization's policies, approved escalation procedures, applicable law, and the customer's rights and autonomy.